Blog Talk Radio.
At 12 o'clock, it's Talking Sports with Mike T. I'm your host, Mike Tremontozzi, here with you for the next half hour as we go over everything in the world of sports that we can fit in a half hour. Let's start right off the bat, the NBA Finals, which almost got upstaged by Jay-Z last night. I don't know if everybody saw the commercial that Jay came out with at halftime for his new album that is surprisingly coming out in 2 weeks on the 4th of July, Magna Carta Holy Grail. The commercial was about 3 minutes long. Jay-Z, Rick Rubin, Pharrell, Swizz Beatz, Timberland, everybody was basically in on this commercial, and it really showed a behind-the-scenes look of Jay's new album. And it really, I forgot the game was on, personally. All of a sudden, instead of my friends texting me about the game, all of a sudden they're all texting about this commercial. And everybody forgot for about 5 minutes that there was a basketball game on. And a pretty interesting basketball game. Well, this whole series is taking a kind of crazy feel to it. Outside of game one, all these games have followed this plot of close for the first half, and then at some point in the third quarter, it all goes away and it turns into a blowout. So the script didn't change yesterday, where what was a close game at halftime turned into a Spurs blowout in the fourth quarter, thanks to a revived Manu Ginobili, who dropped 24 and 10, starting for the first time in almost a year. And the shooting of Danny Green, which has become one of the bigger plots of this thing, this whole series, is Danny Green turning into the most deadly three-point shooter in the history of the world, setting the NBA Finals record for most three-pointers in a series. Broke it with halfway through the third quarter. Danny Green set the record. 8 of 15 from the field, 6 of 10 from downtown, 24.6 rebounds for Danny Green. Every game in double figures, shooting an insane amount from three. The Spurs as a team shot 41% from three. The Heat actually shot better. The Heat shot 48%, led by the 4-for-4 from Ray Allen, where he dropped 21 points, a bunch of them in the fourth quarter when the game was over and the Heat actually attempted to make a comeback. They got it down to 11, but I didn't get any closer than that. Spurs won by 10, 114-104. The problem that the Heat have is they got their points from the big three, and they actually got 21 from Ray Allen. Anytime the Heat score 104 points, you have to assume the Heat are going to win the game. The Heat gave up 114 points. They let the Spurs shoot 60% from the field, which negates the 18 turnovers that the Spurs had, which the Spurs normally can't win games with 18 turnovers. They haven't won the two games they've lost. The series they've lost because of double-digit turnovers. The Heat had 15 turnovers. So both teams turned it over at an alarming rate if you're Eric Spoelstra or if you're Greg Popovich. The difference in this game was the field goal percentage, 60-43 in favor of the Spurs. The rejuvenation of Manu Ginobili, 24-10. Nothing from the bench, but that's because Ginobili was in the starting lineup. They only got 7 points off their bench compared to 31 for the Heat. A majority of that was Ray Allen. The rest of the bench combined for 10. Shane Battier, again, contributed nothing. 2-for-6 from three. James Jones hit a garbage time three in the fourth quarter. The Heat are only going to go as far as I think their defense takes them. They've shown the ability to play offense. They're a team that can get at you and score in a blur. They cut a 17-point lead down to 11 in about a minute. LeBron was getting to the basket. He had an iffy game, 8 of 22, but 25 points, 6 rebounds, and 8 assists, 4 steals. I don't know what else LeBron James can do to where people can get off his back. It's a problem I've always had with people talking about LeBron James and Carmelo Anthony that they don't do enough. Well, I don't know how they don't do enough when LeBron, when Carmelo led the league in scoring, and LeBron is averaging scoring 25, 6, and 8, and coming close to a triple-double almost every game. You know, 33 and 11 in game 4, 15 and 11 in games in game 3. I guess people want, you know, 40 points, 20 rebounds, and 15 assists every game. I just don't know what he's not doing that people want him to do. You know, he didn't let Tony Parker go 10 of 14. He didn't let Manu Ginobili get 24 points. He wasn't guarding Danny Green. You know, there's only so much one player can do before you start to wonder, what is Mario Chalmers doing? Why is Danny Green getting wide open off of screens? Simple screens along the baseline, he's getting wide open. Why is Tony Parker beating anybody off the dribble? Where's the Heat defense when they need it the most? If they played normal Miami Heat defense, they win this game, and then they go back to Miami with all the momentum and probably the best chance to win a championship because they'd only have to win one of the next two at home. And Ginobili even mentioned that in the post game, saying there's no way we can go to Miami needing to win both games. Well, now they go to Miami only needing one. And I highly doubt whoever won last night was not going to win the series. Because do you really think the Spurs are going to lose two games in a row with a chance to win a championship? They may not lose on tomorrow. I highly doubt they're losing tomorrow and Thursday. Just like if the Heat won tonight, I highly doubt they were losing both games at home. The Spurs are too veteran-minded and have already won in Miami to let a chance like this slip away. The questions come down to, can they limit their turnovers? You can't have 18 turnovers again because I don't think you're going to shoot 60% again from the field. They can't live with those high teens turnovers. Anything above 15 presents a problem. You know, they're not going to get 5 like they had in game 1. But if they can live between that 10 and 12 turnovers, that really gives them the best possible chance to win. This game was a weird anomaly where both teams shot really well. The Heat shot almost 50% from 3 and 43% from the field. The Spurs, like I said, went lights out and shot 60%. When you've got Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker only combining to miss 11 shots, or 12 shots. I mean, that's insane. Danny Green only missed 7. He was 60% from 3, which is about what he's shooting for the series. The Heat finally got some more production from Dwayne Wade the last two games. A monster performance in Game 4 when they needed it the most, when people were just starting to question whether Dwayne was ever going to be the same player that he was when he was younger. And I don't think he is, but what he's showing you in spurts is that he can still be a dominant player. 25 and 10 last night with 4 rebounds, 2 blocks, a steal. You know, after his 32 and 6, people might have thought it was 2006. With the way Dwayne Wade dominated that game and the way he got big shots when they needed him the most. The question comes down to on tomorrow night is, can the Heat guard the pick and roll? They've done a terrible job with it so far, especially last night. Parker got to the basket at will. And then it's collapsing the defense, and the Spurs are so good at moving the ball that it's forcing the Heat to scramble, and they're leaving people wide open. And if the Spurs are going to shoot 41% from 3 and shoot 60% from the field, they're not going to lose. The Heat need to continue to force turnovers. They need to play not physical defense. They've got to play better defense. They've got to play more reactionary defense. They're sitting there and they're waiting for the Spurs to make the first move, and they can't do that because you're just letting the Spurs go and do whatever they want. You have to take it away from them. If that means putting LeBron James on Tony Parker, then so what? You're going to make Kawhi Leonard beat you then. Leonard had 16-8 last night, so he had a very solid game, but I'm going to live with that. I can't live with Tony Parker getting 26 points and just collapsing my defense every time he gets to the basket. It can't happen. If I'm Eric Spoelstra, I have to take it away. Make Parker into a perimeter shooter. I'll live with it. If he's going to shoot 10 for 14 and 9 of them are jump shots, then you know what? I'll live with Tony Parker taking jump shots. I can't live with Tony Parker getting to the basket. I just can't. If I'm the Heat, I have to go down playing my best, taking away what they do and forcing the Spurs to beat you with secondary things. Yeah, listen, I don't think anybody expected Danny Green to shoot 65% or whatever he's shooting from three for the series, but they shoot such a well that the Heat's Achilles heel all season has been three-point shooting and allowing teams to shoot a high three-point percentage. That's why the Knicks played them well. That's why the Spurs have played them well. Teams that shoot the three-pointer well normally do pretty well against the Heat because the Heat have a terrible time closing out on three-point shooters and defending the three-point line in general. And then nothing has been more obvious in this series than the fact that the Spurs are just going lights out from downtown. But if I'm the Heat, I almost can live with that, but I can't give them that and then the down-low game of Parker and Duncan. Ginobili finally woke up, but I can't. The Heat just did a terrible job. They let the Spurs, A, dictate tempo. B, they let them get anywhere they wanted on the basketball court, and they did a horrible job of forcing the Spurs into second and third options. They were out-rebounded again, although 36-34, not really that big of an issue. To me, the biggest question is, on Tuesday night, are the Heat going to be engaged enough defensively to where this win-one, lose-one, win-one, lose-one, win-one, lose-one scenario we're in breaks, and they can win two in a row? I don't know. I don't see it because the Heat have shown you they play well one game and then they play like garbage the next game, whether it's play garbage the whole game in all facets like they did in Game 3 or they play horrible defensively like they did in Game 5. I don't know. But I know that if the Heat do allow the Spurs to continue to do what they've done in being successful, which is getting to the basket and shooting the three, the series will be over on Tuesday because the Heat can't allow that and still try and win because the Spurs are too efficient offensively, especially if they cut down their turnovers. Or if they cut down their turnovers and they play as efficiently offensively and Miami doesn't take one of these two options away, you can mail in the check. The game's over. Now, I think it'll go 7. I thought it would go 7 in the beginning, so I'm expecting the Heat to come back here and show something. But they have to show something. You know, they were talking in the playoffs that the Heat going to lose 5 games in the playoffs this year. Well, not only that, they've lost 6 in the last 2 series, and then you factor in the one game they lost to the Bulls, they've already lost 7. And if they don't win the championship with 66 wins, obviously the winning streak, there's going to be some questions about the makeup of this team going forward. Do you entertain trading a Chris Bosh? Do you really try and find more veteran guys that will come in for the vet minimum, like a Ray Allen did this year or a Battier did a couple of years before that, or Rashard Lewis who's tried to restart his career, didn't work? Is Norris Cole the point guard of the future? Is it still Chalmers? I don't know. They both played like garbage last night, 2-for-11 combined, and those two baskets were by Chalmers. Finished with 7 points and 4 rebounds, only 1 assist. Then again, on the Heat, point guard doesn't really play the point guard because LeBron James handles the ball so much, kind of plays as an off guard. So do you really need a point guard, an actual physical point guard, to control the tempo when you have a LeBron James who's basically a point guard anyway? There'll be some questions on this Heat team and on Pat Riley to try and figure out why has this team gone to three finals and potentially won, if they win the next two games and they've won two straight titles and two out of 3 years when they've been in the finals, they've won. Okay, then maybe it's working. Maybe you go another year with it before you try and tinker it. But if they lose, especially if they lose Tuesday night, if you don't even get to a game seven, I don't know. I have serious questions then about whether or not this is the same team next year. You know, Bosch has shown you in the playoffs that he can step up and still be a number one option when needed and can get you baskets when needed. Does that entice a team that needs a down-low scorer to where the Heat can maybe recoup either some manageable contracts and some young guys or some picks and try and develop a better core around LeBron and what's left of what Dwayne Wade has left, which is he's shown you in the playoffs is maybe a little bit more than what some people thought a couple weeks ago. Is he ever going to be 100%? I doubt it. But he's a lot better, and I think he's got a little bit more left than some people thought. I think he's got another year of Dwayne Wade-esque, you know, 18 to 22 points a game in him before we really start wondering what's left in Dwayne Wade. Because you got to remember, he is older than all these other guys. Wade did go to college for a couple of years at Marquette while everyone else came out of high school, or 1 year at Bosch and Carmelo's case in college. So he's got more miles on his legs. He plays a more reckless style than the other guys do. You know, he's going to be 32 years old in January. That's, for him, 32 is almost like 38 in the way he plays. But I still think they've got another year of that before you start wondering, is he going to be, you know, more of a 15-point-per-game guy the rest of the way here. To which the point is, you need to get more people around LeBron James. If you're going to keep LeBron James, and he does have the opt-out, which they all have those opt-outs after next year, obviously he's going to opt out. Does he leave Miami? I doubt it. They can offer him the most money now, just like there's no way Carmelo's leaving New York. I don't think these guys are going to change teams, but they need to find a way to build more around these guys because this is probably their last big contract. You know, they'll get a 4 or 5 year contract and they'll be 34, 35 by the time it's over. You know, and how many more miles do they have on it? So this will be the last contract of their prime quality years to where you can get a team around them that can win a championship. So if you do not win this year and you're the Heat, do you start to break it up a year early and maybe package a Bosch and Mario Chalmers for, you know, a team that needs a low post scorer that can give you some draft picks or maybe get you some, you know, young players that they're willing to part with to get the now scoring that they need in Bosch? You know, those are things that Pat Riley's going to have to answer if they don't win the championship. Now, he can be stubborn and just go with it for another year because, hey, you know, the results, have they been what they wanted? No, I don't think they would have wanted to go 1-2 in finals. But if they do lose on Tuesday, you do want to look at the bright side. How many teams in the NBA would kill to go to three straight finals and have a championship, at least one championship? Just ask Knicks fans. They'd kill to even just be in the finals. They'd kill to be in the Eastern Conference finals. And the Heat have gotten to three straight NBA finals and are probably the favorites next year to get to a fourth straight finals. Now, if they lose this year and they get to the finals next year and lose again, now you've got issues of, you went to four straight finals, but you're like the Buffalo Bills. You won one, so you're not totally the Buffalo Bills, but you would have gone 1-3, which is, you know, not the greatest. And LeBron would be 1-4 in the finals. you know, if you look at it, not a lot of great superstars lose multiple finals. You know, Magic lost a couple to the Celtics and the Bulls. Bird lost a couple to the Lakers. Isaiah never lost in the finals. Drexler lost to the Pistons and the Bulls. Jordan obviously never lost. Kareem lost a couple. But it's a couple. It's two. It's not three, four, five times in the finals and you lose. That becomes a problem. Tim Duncan's never lost in the finals. Jason Kidd's lost twice in the finals. So, you know, you need, I think LeBron needs, if LeBron just plays the way he's played last couple games, I really think the Heat have a chance to win game six. Plus, you know, with a game in hand, you know, Popovich is liable to do anything. Imagine what would happen if Popovich rested his players to force a game seven and just rested them for game seven. Imagine the uproar that would cause with a championship on the line. I don't think he's got the gall to do it, but would you put anything by him? No. But like I said, I think the Heat will win tomorrow, and I think the Spurs will win game seven. That's the way I saw it coming the whole way. So I don't see any reason why to change what I've thought. Just as a Heat fan, I'd be very worried if their defensive effort is the same as it was last night, that they're not going to get to a game seven. Let's move on a little bit to Major League Baseball right now. I know the Stanley Cup Finals is going on, and you got a pretty exciting matchup in Boston and Chicago. Both games got to overtime. The Blackhawks won game one in triple overtime. Bruins come back, come from behind to win game two in overtime, 2-1. You know, thanks to Tuukka Rask, who's been lights out all postseason. And that series is tied 1-1, now going to Boston for two games, 3-4, and then they go back to Chicago for game five. But let's talk about baseball for a little bit, because you're now starting to get to the point where you can see what teams are what right now. And you look at the way the AL East is shaping up, the Red Sox and the Orioles have kind of have a game and a half ahead of the Yankees, two games, and in the division, the Yankees almost blew the game last night, up 6-0 in the ninth inning, and Rivera had to come in to strike out Pujols with the bases loaded, only up 6-5, which is a lot close for comfort if you're a Yankee fan, but at this point, I think a win is a win, and you just want to get the heck off the West Coast with a win. You know, they went 1-7, they went 6-1, then they went 1-5. And if anything, you thought maybe last night was the game they could lose, going against Jared Weaver, who can shut down an opposing lineup. He gave up a couple big hits, the biggest one being the 3-run homer to Hafner with two outs and two strikes. So that's a tough pill. Also, the run the Yankees got in the eighth inning obviously became the winning run. Otherwise, it would have been 5-5. Now, their next couple games, they have the Dodgers, and then I think they face the Rays. I'll double-check that. And then this is a big test for the Yankees. The Dodgers come in struggling, but the Yankees need to get some wins. Now, if they lose both of these games to the Dodgers, then we've got problems. Two games against the Dodgers, four against the Rays, and then three against the Rangers, and three against the Orioles to end the month of June. You have Hughes against Ryu tomorrow, Capuano for the Dodgers against Kuroda on Wednesday. Obviously, the Yankees feel like they have the pitching, advantage in these two games against the Dodgers, but the Dodgers can hit the ball, and the Yankees, in that, especially at home, are susceptible to giving up home runs. Then you face the Rays for four games at home, and then the Rangers for three games at home. The Rangers just came off a terrible series against the Blue Jays, who, if you don't look right now, but the Blue Jays are absolutely red hot. They won five in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. They moved to with only four games under 500, and after the start they had to sit there and go to be 32-36 with a chance to, if by the end of the month, to be over 500, That's a pretty solid move here by the Blue Jays, who are starting to make their move. The Rays sitting there two games back of the Yankees, so they have a four-game series. Moore, Hernandez, Archer, Colomé for the Rays. Pettit, Phelps, Sabathia, Hughes for the Yankees. Obviously, Matt Moore against Andy Pettit, a battle of two dominant lefties. Pettit coming off a shaky game against the Angels where he lost 5-2. Didn't give up all the runs, but did not pitch well. Phelps lost to the Angels. Didn't pitch badly, but again, the Yankees can't score. And then you face the Rangers and the Orioles. Both teams, Orioles had a decent series against the Red Sox. The Rangers, like I said, had an abysmal weekend against the Blue Jays. Then, the month of July is Cupcake City. Minnesota for seven games, but then sprinkled in there, you have seven games against the Orioles and the Kansas City Royals, who are also, red hot and playing really well. So the Yankees, you'll know more about the Yankees at the end of this month. Dodgers, Rays, Orioles, Rangers is how they end the month of June. And only seven games over 500 right now, treading water. Now Teixeira's hurt, re-aggravated the wrist injury. They see no tear in the tendon sheath, but there's inflammation. So he's probably going to be sitting for a couple days. You can't rule out a DL stint. But at this point, I don't think he will go on the DL. Like I said, the Rangers have lost six in a row, including the sweep at the hands of the Blue Jays over the weekend. The Rays, 4-6 in their last 10 games. They lose a series to the Royals. And like I said, the Royals have come on fire. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. They're now just a game under 500, only five games out of the division lead owned by the Tigers. Oakland up three games on Texas. Basically, it's those two teams and then the rest of that division. The Mariners, 10.5 back, 31-39. And the Angels, who continue to underachieve, are 30-39. But not a good year for baseball in Southern California. The Dodgers are 10 games out coming here to face the Yankees. They just lost 2 out of 3 to the Pirates, who continue to amaze at 41-28 with all the injuries they've had to their pitching staff. And they're still hanging there with the Reds and Cardinals. You look at the NL East, the Nationals lose 2 out of 3 to on the road. They now head to Philadelphia, 6.5 back of the Braves, who kind of righted the ship there and won the last two games against the Giants. Giants falling behind, 1.5 now behind Arizona. If the Dodgers can get hot, they're only 7.5 back of that division. San Diego's won 6 in a row, but outside of that, if the Dodgers can just get going, starting this week with the Yankees on Tuesday and Wednesday, they can kind of salvage some things and start to right the ship. There's still a lot of baseball left. It's only the middle of June. You still have, almost 3 full months of baseball. But the Dodgers have a lot of work. Their work is cut out for them. So at this point next week, you're going to have a better, even better idea if this Yankee season is collapsing. Do they salvage it with these games against the Dodgers and against the Rays? This time next week, they'll be 6 games. So if you're the Yankees, you need to win at least 4 of them. Anything less than that, and you could be in trouble. So we're unfortunately out of time. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. I hope everybody enjoys their week and has a great week, enjoys everything, and come back next week. I hope they have everybody back again, and everybody enjoy their week, and we'll see everybody back here next week. So take care, everybody.